My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.
There is one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations, today only, up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. Japan's stock market finally pulls out of a slump that lasted more than a generation. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. A milestone today in Japan after more than three decades. The key stock indicator for the Japanese market, the Nikkei 225, hit a new high. If you are 33 years old or so, you have never seen a Japanese market this high. Diane Swag, chief economist at the audit, tax, and advisory firm KPMG, remembers the bubble that preceded a slump of a generation and a half.
I remember when, you know, we were worried that Japan Inc. was the name on books and on the titles of magazine covers, that they were going to overtake the U.S. And, you know, they own things like Rockefeller Center and Pebble Beach. I mean, they're buying these high properties. And then they burst their bubble, went into the end of a bubble that was much worse than anything we saw after the global financial crisis in terms of duration. It went on for decades of stagnation, disinflation. I have a friend of mine who's an economist in Japan, and he was hoping that his children would be able to see, with the renewed bit of inflation in Japan, actual wage gains instead of wage cuts in their lifetime.
It's interesting, and part of what happened with taking Japan so long to move its way forward after that bubble is something that the U.S. faces, which is demography. We have an older population, and as people retire, they're out of the main wage and tax-paying parts of their lives.
Exactly. And in fact, the demographic shift in Japan hit them much sooner than it hit us. We're bumping up against it now with the baby boom aging into retirement. It really sapped their labor force growth. And economic growth is just a combination of two very simple things. The economy can only grow as fast as new workers are entering the labor force and as productive as those workers, each one of those workers are. And Japan lacked both the number of new workers coming into the labor force because of the aging demographics and a lack of productivity, which sent them into this long stagnation, disinflation period, and some bouts of deflation where they actually had to take cuts in their wages and losses in their living standards. And as bad as the global financial crisis and its aftermath was for the U.S., it was much less here than what they had to endure, but over the course of decades.
NVIDIA, the big name in artificial intelligence microchips, posted spectacular profits yesterday, and its stock is up more than 14% at the moment. Some investors had bet big against the company in recent days, figuring its quarterly results would disappoint. Wrong.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
There is one last chance to double your impact when you donate during this May fundraiser. It's Match Monday, and the Investors Challenge Fund is matching donations, today only, up to $25,000. We need to put every dollar of these funds to use for our newsroom in the months ahead so we can keep you and people across the country informed. Give right now and generously at marketplace.org/donate. Starting Monday, people eligible for food stamps can use SNAP benefits to pay for groceries delivered from a healthy food-focused, online-only grocer called Thrive Market. Here's Savannah Marr.
For about a decade, the USDA has been testing whether grocery delivery could help SNAP users. Nevin Cohen at the City University of New York says the pandemic gave a clear answer.
The USDA realized that online shopping was really important,
especially for SNAP users with transportation or mobility challenges.
Whether it's seniors or people with physical disabilities or caregivers of young children.
Like the mom of a newborn, who LaMonica Jones recently talked to.
She shared that one of the saving graces for her was her ability to utilize her SNAP benefits online.
Jones is with the nonprofit DC Hunger Solutions. She says residents of the poorest neighborhoods in that city have just one or two local grocers to choose from.
Or take public transportation 30, 40 minutes to purchase groceries.
Jones says delivery fees can be a barrier, but delivery services can also help SNAP users shop around for cheaper groceries outside their neighborhoods. I'm Savannah Marr for Marketplace.
We've been watching banks in recent weeks after Moody's downgraded to junk status a mid-size bank, New York Community. The bank holds commercial real estate loans, and that sector's been sagging with so many people still working remotely. But are these fears justified? Kevin Fagan is head of commercial real estate economic analysis at Moody's Analytics, which we should note acts independently from Moody's credit rating agency. He spoke with my colleague, Sabri Benishour.
Can you explain the relationship between commercial real estate and banks, specifically regional banks, and why this has so many people worried?
There's actually one bit of a frivolous reason why people are worried, in that there was some kind of bad data that went around last year that suggested that the bank's exposure to commercial real estate was higher than it actually is. There was a stat going around that 80% of CRE lending was by regional banks. That's just patently not the case. Now, however, some of those regional banks actually do have high exposure, and there are a lot of loan maturities coming in 2024, and some of those will result in losses.
Well, that looks like it's kind of happening with NYCB. Is NYCB a sign of things to come?
In a way, yes, but I think the story is more nuanced than a lot of headlines suggest. Commercial real estate is if you think of it, it really is the physical manifestation of the entire economy. You know, so offices are reflective of office using employment. It really is a mirror to the entire economy. So it does tend to go up and down. But to directly answer your question, it is a sign of things to come, because there will be other banks that have challenges, but they're not going to see trouble unless they have other issues going on as well. There's something wrong with their business model. And actually, NYCB had a whole litany of other things going on.
We know that a lot of people still work from home. We know that leases are long-term and they're still getting renewed and renegotiated. What about that picture specifically for office does not freak you out?
Office is still an extraordinarily important part of the workplace. It is not actually unprecedented what's happening in office. In the 1990s, there was a period of massive consolidation of how companies used office space, where they went from about 250 square feet per employee to half of that, around 225 square feet per employee. But office values and rents continued to go up. And the reason is that we shifted from manufacturing into services, professional services, and filled the offices up despite the net reduction in demand. So we'll see some more banks get in trouble, but let the other asset classes that are doing well will help them. You know, if they're doing well as a business, you know, they'll fare fairly well, and they'll have recovery rates even on their offices, or they can extend those maturities out a little further, particularly where they feel like, you know, that office has a good recoverability.
Kevin Fagan is head of commercial real estate economic analysis at Moody's Analytics. Kevin, thank you so much.
Happy to be here.
Marketplace's Subri Beneshore on interview duty there. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio. It's the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
Hey everyone, it's Rima Khreis, host of This Is Uncomfortable. If you're looking for some good recommendations on books to read, well, you should join This Is Uncomfortable's Summer Book Club. Every other week in our newsletter, we'll share a new book that'll make you rethink your relationship to money, class, and work, while also featuring an interview with the author or an expert on the topic. Plus, when you join, you'll be entered in a giveaway where you could win some This Is Uncomfortable merch. Be sure to check it out. Sign up today at marketplace.org/bookclub.